Welcome to Korean Context, a behind-the-scenes conversation with the scholars, artists and opinion makers that bridge our two worlds. My name's Chad O'Carroll and I'll be your host today. Not everybody in Korea or foreigners abroad want to hear about government-promoted national advertising initiatives that focus on mainstream issues like K-pop, Hallyu, or ancient Korean kimchi culture. Instead, many want to know what ordinary Koreans are talking about and how they feel while going about their daily lives. But where do you go to find out about these kind of things online if you don't speak Korean? Well, stepping in to fill this void last year was a website called KoreaBang.com, developed by two postgraduate Korean studies students hailing from the United Kingdom. Geared primarily at offering English language translations of Korea's most popular online stories and related comments, the KoreaBang site has grown rapidly to become one of the most visited English language websites in the world to focus exclusively on Korean daily life and culture. To find out more, Korean Context spoke to one of the site's two founding editors, Mr. James Pearson. To understand how the site plays an important role not just for the general public, but also more serious Korea-watching communities, Pearson gave details about the unique lens that the site provides and stories that often lay untouched by English language media. Starting out my conversation with Pearson, I asked him to explain why him and his colleague Rafael Rashid decided to call the website KoreaBang.
Well, KoreaBang, the bang in KoreaBang, basically means bang as in PC bang. The name comes from the idea that we actually started off by exporting the format that Chinasmack.com had, which was to find the most popular articles on the Chinese internet, translate them into English, along with netizen comments. And I approached Chinasmack and said, have you ever thought about doing this for Korea? It turns out they had, and working with them very closely over a period of a month or two, we launched KoreaBang. So as I say, the bang bit bang is the Korean word for a room, which is used in PC bang, meaning internet cafe. But it also follows the China smack kind of format of having this country name followed by impact, which comes from the idea that once you actually read all our stories, once you read netizen comments, which are completely unfiltered and often not censored by anybody, there is a kind of impact, this idea of being smacked in the face or this kind of sudden, quite often shocking, realization of what people are actually talking about. And in essence, we do exactly what ChinaSmack does. We scour the Korean internet. We look at the most talked about stories. It's not just the internet, in fact. We will ask ordinary Koreans. We follow the news very, very closely. We take rumors fairly seriously, so that, you know, because a lot of these things start offline before they reach online. And using all these resources, using a team of translators and volunteers, we find the most interesting, or not often the most interesting, but the most talked about things in Korea, and try and translate them into English for a non-Korean speaking audience.
And through translating, the comments, you're aiming to sort of give a window into what is it the average South Korean is thinking, or is it other people that are making these comments? Do they tend to normally fit a certain demographic?
Their demographic is that they're netizens, and anybody can spend any amount of time on indeed any website in the world and find that netizens hiding behind the veil of the internet will quite happily say some fairly outrageous things. It doesn't take long to spend time on YouTube to read countless ridiculous comments and arguments in English. So I think it's important to remember, and in fact we explicitly say this on our website, because we are asked this kind of question a lot. At no point do we really feel that the netizen comments that we translate actually represent a Korean mindset as a whole. And in fact, very often it's the people who will read these comments and decide that they do represent a netizen mindset as a whole, who perhaps already had the kind of prejudice that would lead them to reach that conclusion in the first place. So all we're trying to do is show that some sort of natural reaction to it. But of course, it is important to remember that that is just a netizen reaction. They're never really representative of other Koreans. I mean, even though Korea is one of the most so-called wired-in nations, according to their own propaganda in the South, It is still very much it's not representative as a whole. But by showing them, what we're trying to do is show, pull back the curtain a little bit on perhaps how some people are reacting to things. So whilst the stories that we choose are definitely perhaps popular or talked about by Koreans in general, and are therefore perhaps representative of a debate that is going on in South Korea, the netizen comments are by no only representative of themselves.
Mm-hmm. And who's funding all of this?
Well, to be honest, nothing but hard work and love keeps it going. We make basically no money from KoreaBang, and I wouldn't have started it if I was trying to make money from it either, because as a business model, it's ridiculous. The money is quite frankly irrelevant. The enjoyment that we get from it, and also the opportunities that it presents us, and the debates that it starts, are very, very important. And nothing like this really existed in Korea before. So, in a way, we're also doing quite a good service for people who are interested in things. In terms of actual funding, well, obviously there are some overheads. I mean, the website gets a huge amount of traffic. We can have anything from 7,000 to 12,000 hits in a day, up to 40,000 if we've broken a major news story. Those are unique hits I'm referring to. So this obviously takes its toll on servers and things. Our modest advertising revenue covers a little bit of that, but most of it comes from China Smack, which is a huge website. I mean, they have well over 1.5 million page views a month.
Wow.
They are one of the websites on Chinese internet culture, and they'll always be bigger than KoreaBang. So they keep us going, which is kind of in a historical sense, as we kind of have a bit of fun with, because sometimes we do feel a little bit like a tributary state to China Smack. As with any website that China Smack runs, it's all covered by them. And to be honest, the overheads are not much either. It's not a hugely expensive thing to undertake.
How would you sort of characterize the type of stories on KoreaBang? Is it mainly gossip, or are they, you know, more substantive, you know, more useful to, are they useful to the, for example, the scholarly community, or is it, you know, sort of,
No, I understand what you're saying. I mean, from a quick look, a lot of the articles do look very gossipy. Part of that is, because we're doing our job. Our only job is to translate what's popular on the Korean internet, and the Korean internet and media relies very heavily on gossip. As does, in fact, any media. But in Korea, it does seem to be particularly gossipy. It's a very gossipy society. So the fact that KoreaBang would also be gossipy, in a sense, proves that it's doing its job. It's trying to sort of show what people are talking about, and to an extent, show how they're reacting to those stories. But it's not all gossip. And it's particularly if you're from the scholarly community, as I myself was too, when I started KoreaBang as a postgraduate student in Cambridge, it's incredibly useful to find out what people are actually talking about. It doesn't matter if you're trying to deal with the dynamics of international relations between North and South Korea, or you're trying to look at how the Korean wave has spread across Africa or something ridiculous like that. Actually seeing what people are talking about, I think for a lot of academics in particular, and diplomats, journalists, everybody, actually really encourages them to sort of break out of their small spheres and circles and try and understand a little bit more about what's happening on the ground around them.
So what are some of the myths about Korea that Americans or other foreigners traditionally have about Korea that you think have been broken by your website?
Well, I don't know if we've broken any of these myths, because it's never really been one of our goals to dispel any myths. However, in the sense that we do just try and represent what people are talking about or what matters to normal people, it's fairly clear that certain long-standing ideas, such as, for example, Koreans eating dogs every day, are a very outdated, is a very outdated myth, very outdated mindset to follow. So we've actually followed the case of recent cases in the Korean, where the Korean media has reported on the consumption of dog meat. And from the netizen reaction, and again, I should also stress that is just a netizen reaction, because I'm sure a lot of old people in the country and in the countryside do still eat dog. The majority of young people in particular do seem to be very much against it. So in that sense, perhaps we don't dispel the myth, but I think we do sort of maybe educate people on it indirectly. We update people on it, and maybe just open people's eyes a little bit. I mean, I think when you have a site such as ours that shows people's quite natural reactions to it in translation, it really kind of helps to make people understand that actually there isn't so much difference once you do get beyond that language barrier. Of course, there are fundamental cultural differences, particularly between the likes of Europe and America and Korea, which do separate us in many ways. But when you look at some of the reactions to certain things, people react in just the same way as they would anywhere else. So this, I think, means that we do actually contribute something a little bit more useful beyond just, you know, gossipy stories and dispelling myths.
And obviously Korea is, you know, back in the early 50s, it was one of the poorest countries in the world. And now it's, you know, one of the economic powerhouses. It's changed so much so quickly. And a lot of people say that, you know, whilst technology and everything, there's been huge changes, the change of people's quality of life and so on, that culture has been playing catch up to this, this kind of, you know, rapid evolution of society. Do you think that's still the case from, you know, your observations of what's trending in Korea and how Koreans react to situations? Is there still a lag? Is there still this traditional, you know, part of the national thinking that it differentiates it from, I don't know, other Northeast Asian countries?
Perhaps, yes, to an extent. I mean, there's no denying that economically, at least, South Korea developed extremely rapidly in the latter half of the 20th century. And in fact, I almost bore myself by saying that because it's such a common thing to talk about. To an extent that I think perhaps there is a culture of being frustrated with the pace of development. Once you develop at that speed, then you almost have an expectation to continue to develop at that speed. And there's always a sort of frustration that things aren't perhaps moving fast enough, or everybody's got to have the newest thing or the most recent gadget or the most recent item of clothing. So I think this inevitably has some sort of cultural impact, yes. But I don't know if we can attribute that solely to economic development, because, for example, in the north, you have similar patterns in many ways. Korea has always sort of embraced new ideas and adapted itself in the process. And I think it will always continue to do so. So yes, I would agree to an extent, but I don't know if we can put that down solely to economic development.
And despite all these achievements, you know, there is still a sense in some quarters that Koreans aren't the happiest of people. There's still the high suicide rates. Do you think this is ever going to change, or is there something embedded in the national psyche that is overtly negative when compared to, you know, European societies, for example?
I think first of all, it's extremely difficult to compare Korean society with European society, because even European society itself is so diverse, we can't even label it under one single umbrella. But Korean society perhaps puts an incredible amount of pressure on people to behave or act in a certain way and achieve a certain status, for example. So going back to an earlier question, perhaps that is something to do with the pace of change, the pace of development. But I don't know, quite frankly, if that will always be the case. And actually, despite that being quite a commonly held view of Korea, Koreans are some of the happiest people I know. This idea of Han, the Han being the thing, the tragedy that causes a lot of Koreans to perhaps take their own lives or act in certain ways, or this gives off this idea that Korea is a bad place to be, is always balanced off with the idea of Hung, its opposite, being happiness. And until you really understand that, I don't think it's possible to say that this is really a pressing social issue. Yes, suicide rates are high. Yes, it puts an incredible amount of pressure on the society, on the people. But I think once you scratch beneath the surface a little bit more, it's not actually the case. People are incredibly happy and incredibly dynamic. I mean, there's a reason why the Korean tourist government, for all their good intentions, did actually hit the nail on the head once when they described Korea as being dynamic.
But despite that, you know, positive sides to Korea, a lot of people might say that your website has a lot of negative content on South Korea and Korean culture. And on your website about page, you say, some might not want Korea's dirty linen aired to the rest of the world, but with all sincerity, we do it to further mutual understanding. How does showing this side of Korean culture help bolster mutual understanding? And in particular, isn't there the risk that by, you know, showcasing some of these negative aspects to South Korean life, that you can also run the risk of increasing misconceptions more broadly?
It's a question we get asked a lot, and it's completely understandable, I think, because if you read the majority of English language sources on South Korea, for example, Yonhap News in English, or the English language daily newspapers such as the Korea Times and Korea Herald, you'll be forgiven for assuming that everything is rosy. There's certainly the case that if you watch Korean dramas as well, everything looks kind of shiny and happy, and the government has worked hard, in fact, to further this image. But this image is false, as far as I'm concerned. If you can actually get beyond this and look at that, look at the fact that there are some very negative things that happen in South Korea, you'll understand that there are negative things that happen anywhere. I mean, in a way, it's the idea that you can show some solidarity with people who are going through maybe a tough time, brings us closer together. And I think this is where the idea of mutual understanding comes from. It's not that we only want to try and publish negative stories, and in fact we don't, even though a lot of them are. The reason that so many are, in fact, is because it's the Korean people that are choosing our stories and not us. By the time people have, what we normally do is we find the most commented stories on the Korean internet from a variety of portal sites such as Daum, Naver, etc. And we translate those ones, and that actually gives us a very small pool of stories to choose from. And normally within that small pool, we've got political stories. There are like lottery results and things, and there's celebrity gossip. And where possible, we avoid the celebrity gossip, and we avoid sport because we don't think it's really got a mass appeal. But very often, those top stories will be about maybe a murder, a rape, something pretty horrendous. But the fact that we actually publish those, and the fact that we show that people are reacting to them in just as negative a way as perhaps we would in Europe or they might in America, I think is actually a really helpful way of seeing that beyond all this glitz and glamour that the Korean government works so hard to show, there is a normal side to life. So it's not really a negative aspect to life, it's just life.
Mm. But you also, it's interesting, you said there that some of the traditional English language news sources, Yonhap, Korea Times, Herald, Chosun Ilbo, they are not including these kind of stories, it sounds like, and you're having to find them on Naver, Daum. Why is that, do you think? Do the English language dailies have a vested interest not to present this side of Korea? Is there a conspiracy to avoid touching on these kind of stories, and what, you know, why are they only being talked about on these other more indigenous Korean only websites?
I think a lot of these English language websites realize that they have a huge responsibility to communicate Korean culture to the rest of the world, and despite having the best intentions, what they actually end up doing is creating a false image of Korea that is all about Samsung, K-pop, and God knows what else. So I don't think that they completely self-censor, because in fact there is still a lot of negative stuff that makes it into English language press. But I think perhaps this comes down to this idea that Korea is still kind of not really well known around the world. And what better example than Psy's ridiculous Gangnam Style song that I honestly wanted to like top myself by the time that had reached 1 billion views on YouTube, because I lost all faith in humanity by the time that happened. Yet nevertheless, this was presented as some sort of opportunity by the Korean media as an acceptance of Korean culture. But so many people watching it had no idea it had anything to do with K-pop or Korean culture whatsoever. So I think there is still a massive gap in perhaps where Korea is, what it is now, and how people perceive it. I spend a lot of time in various parts of mainland Western Europe, and if I say I'm going to Korea, very often people ask me, well, which one? There are still people who don't really understand which one's the nice Korea, which one's the naughty Korea, which was perfectly summed up by that Brisbane Metro newspaper over the Olympics when they listed North and South Korea in the medals table as nice Korea and naughty Korea. So I think in the English language press in South Korea, they perhaps feel they have responsibility to show Korea in a certain light. Perhaps they're also worried about Korea losing face. So I don't blame them for that, and I certainly don't see it as my responsibility to show the other side of the coin, because if I did that, then I would be injecting too much bias into the website. Again, all we're trying to do is show perhaps what normal people are concerned about.
All right, so what have been some of the more notable stories to appear on Korea Bang this year or last?
One of our most long-running and perhaps infamous ongoing themes is our Ladygate stories, and basically what that involves is some South Korean woman or young girl misbehaving in some way, often not even in a bad way, in public, who is then recorded by someone's smartphone and posted to YouTube or onto Taom or like some South Korean portal, and it goes viral, and whatever the girl was doing, she becomes known as something something woman, so as in Momonyo in Korean. So lots of examples. One was a slightly mentally deranged looking woman who was smoking and drinking on the Seoul metro. She became known as Sojunyo when she was drinking soju, Mekjunyo when she was drinking beer, Tambenyo when she was smoking. But then on the flip side, there are some people who are just doing something as simple as eating a pot noodle on the tube, which is, if you spend time in London, is not exactly a rare sight. The netizens sort of use this as a chance to discuss what's happened to the dignity of Korean women. And very often it's very misogynist. Again, these are the responses from netizens. They're not by any means reflective of society as a whole. But the trend certainly does seem to be that. And we didn't mean to sort of campaign or cover this in any way. It just so happens that for a very long period of 2012, in fact, and it's died down a lot recently, these kind of stories were right at the top of the rankings. Best example was when I was in Seoul in March 2012. Obama had just arrived. I think it was the largest gathering for the G20, the largest gathering of foreign dignitaries or foreign presidents, etc. Then since the formation of the United Nations, security on the streets of Seoul was probably the highest it's ever been. Western headlines were completely dominated by the entire affair. But a look on the Korean internet, everybody was talking about Soju Girl, who was drunk on the Seoul metro and seemingly completely out of control. And I remember talking about this to friends and saying, oh, did you see that Obama's in Korea? And everyone was like, no, is he? What's he doing? And as soon as he mentioned Sojunyo, everyone was like, yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? And this is quite a good example, perhaps, of what we try and do, sort of get behind the headlines a bit and find out what people are actually talking about. And then for us, the biggest story we broke was back in September 2012, when some models were flown into Seoul from America to open a new Abercrombie & Fitch Hollister store. And we found a story on the Korean internet that was being very much talked about, where one of the models had been out sightseeing or something and had posed in a sort of caricature way, trying to depict, you know, trying to do the kind of classic, really uncomfortable, racist sort of funny faces and things that you might associate with somebody whose profession is to be a male model, not a diplomat. And these pictures went viral on the South Korean internet, and we translated them, and it got picked up by major Western news sources. The story ended up in the Los Angeles Times. It was on Fox, CNN, Yahoo News. I mean, hardly the news services that I would like us to be on. But nevertheless, it went really, really big, and Hollister actually had to issue a statement. People were cutting up their Hollister clothes and posting pictures of their ripped up Hollister clothing onto the Hollister website. And It was a very interesting time for us. And if anything, I like to think we did our bit to improve people's dress sense by not buying really, really crap Hollister clothing. That's not to say, is perhaps a legal disclaimer, that there was any sort of alternative motive in publishing that story. We only did it because it was popular on the South Korean internet, and we never could have dreamed how big it went. But yeah, at least people, and maybe they'll start to wear better clothes in Seoul now.
Other brands are available.
Yeah.
Do you think there is a role for government in South Korea's cultural diplomacy and outreach? I mean, what you see seems to be completely at odds with what the South Korean government try and portray. You might be familiar with some of the, you know, videos of ancient pavilions and, you know, very beautiful scenery. And do you think that that's of any use?
Well, it's not interesting to me, and it's probably not interesting to a lot of young people who want to go and find out about Korea. It's also probably not why a lot of people do get interested in Korea. It doesn't mean to say the government shouldn't do that, because I think they have every good intention in doing so. Although it does start to get slightly questionable when that starts to slip over into territorial disputes where Gokdo suddenly starts being presented as a tourist destination. However, it's completely understandable, but perhaps, as you say, it's at odds with the career that maybe Korea Bank presents, and is therefore at odds with what Korea is all about. Obviously bamboo forests and ancient pavilions and wearing hanbok and eating kimchi is very much part of Korean culture, but, it's almost like a sort of chocolate box Disneyland version of Korea. And I really don't think that's why people get so interested in the place. I don't think that's why people go to Korea and stay there. You know, people don't move to Korea for a short-term job and end up staying there, getting married, etc., settling down because they want to make kimchi every day or because they want to spend all their time in pavilions. They do it because it's a really, really interesting place. It's fast-moving, it's dynamic, it changes almost every single year. People are wonderful. They're happy, sad, angry, and frustrated all at the same time so often. And in fact, it's the kind of, in a way, it's the Korea that the government often tries to hide away or brush under the carpet that I think is the most interesting. For example, people going out drinking a lot and drinking till they fall over and, you know, get up to all sorts of tricks. I mean, I grew up in the northeast of England and that happens pretty much every night. I get great pleasure in seeing that. It also happens in, you know, all the way on the other side of the world. So I think if the government does do that, and they have every right to do so, they need to do it with that in mind. They need to present all aspects of Korea. And they, in a way, sort of missed an opportunity when Psy's Gangnam Style was all the rage, and hopefully is no longer the rage, whereby they tried to sort of say this is K-pop, this is the Korean wave, this is people getting interested in Korea. And, you know, it was a popular video because it was funny. There's this kind of like slightly chubby guy doing this song that nobody could understand except for Korean speakers. That fun playfulness is a massive part of Korean culture. And fun playfulness does not exist in a kimchi museum.
All right, just to round up, what are the sort of future plans for Korea Bang?
Well, we're coming up to our one-year anniversary. We actually launched on the 29th of February last year. So the fact that we're on a leap year is quite funny. So it's not really going to be our first year anniversary. But given that we've been slogging away in between our master's courses, day jobs, and et cetera, we really want to do something special for that one-year relaunch. I think we've had some success in doing interviews and features and things alongside our normal content. And that could be somewhere that we explore a little bit further. We really want to interview not people like me who follow Korea from the outside, but we want to talk to politicians, celebrities, but not K-pop people, nobody boring. We want to talk to people who really are making decisions. You know, I don't care what handbag someone buys. I'm much more interested in people who have maybe they've got some funny story, or the kind of interesting things which you might read about in the back pages of a newspaper, but never really, you wouldn't know about if you didn't know where to look. But we've also, I think we've got to be very careful in the way that we do that, because anything that we put out on CareerBang, unless we explicitly state otherwise, does kind of indicate that the story itself is popular in some way. And I don't think we'll ever move away from that mission. I mean, that is why people read us. That's why the format is successful. It's also why we've been able to help China's Mac expand that format beyond just Korea into Russia, Japan, and Indonesia. So that will always be at the heart of everything we do. But there should be some new and interesting things coming up in 2013.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I do hope you enjoyed today's podcast. You can download other episodes at our podcast website, which you can find at keia.podbean.com. That's keia.podbean.com. We'd also really appreciate if you could leave us some feedback using the comment system on either the Podbean website or directly on our iTunes page. If you'd like to suggest a candidate or topic for a future episode, be sure to drop me an email at ocarroll@keia.org. That's ocarroll@keia.org. Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you can join us next time.